To Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. Woo-hoo. We're the podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss LGBTQ plus history. Yay.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
We are Thomas.
Chris.
Dusty.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome We're to back. Another week of LGBTQ gay stuff podcast. All of it. Yes, Mama.
Yes, Mama. Work, slay.
Slay for another day, bitch. This week, we're going to talk about the book Two Boys Kissing by David Levithan. And we're going to talk about Roy Cohn.
We talk about it all the time.
Hello.
Two boys kissing.
Two boys kissing.
Gay.
We had that joke.
Gay?
Yeah, that's fine. It's okay. I can reuse it. I'll take credit for it.
You took that in the pre-notes. Hey, if you're listening to us, keep listening to us by subscribing to our podcast. You can and hear future episodes. You can do that by just hitting the subscribe button on the app that you're listening to us, whether that's Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, what Amazon Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Do they have podcasts?
Hit subscribe. You want to learn more about us? Excuse.
You want to learn about us? Just cough. Go for it, honey. If you learn more about us, you can go to letstalkaboutgaystuff.com. Let's talk about gay stuff at Facebook and Instagram, and talk gay stuff on Twitter. If you want to send us an email, that's letstalkaboutgaystuff@gmail.com.
Oh, someone's getting a promotion.
Not you.
No,
it's me.
Yeah. Yikes. Ooh. Okay. Speaking of awkward things. me coughing. Speaking of awkward things, so Mom calls. Mom is a listener of the show, as we know. She has been on the show.
And Dustin, she's like, oh, I don't know if you know this, but the two guys that are on the podcast with you are gay.
Gay, yes, gay. But she was asking, she's like, what are you guys going to talk about this can't say a gay word in Florida like law? And I was like, oh, Mom's doing her research. So, I mean, she might be replacing me.
Probably taking me. I'm always a low man on the totem pole.
You just got a promotion.
So. Okay.
Oh, shit.
Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. It's me. I'm the old guy now on the podcast. Like, it's time for Whoopi to go. Yeah, fresh blood. But she was talking about this. So you heard about this?
Yes.
Oh, I had not until you mentioned it. But I did my reading.
Read, Mama.
So apparently in Florida, it's a bill that's going to, basically it has to do with schools, where it's going to limit, you know, they don't want teachers to be able to talk about, you know, gender identity and queer and history and all those things. So it's limiting what they can and cannot say and how they can respond to those things. And but also what I read, what I think was more concerning, was it's also going to affect like what counselors can do to help students that come to them for like advice or for what's the word I'm looking for? You know, like
confidentiality
between their parents. Like, they're not going to be able to respond in the ways they do now because they're not going to be able to have those resources available and share them. So
what all does this bill entail?
It says it's going to have basically for primary schools, and it's going to you're not going to be able to talk about things that are deemed age inappropriate. But there's no like clarification on what is age appropriate, you know, what age this can start at or whatever, or even who's going to determine what is and what isn't.
Because that's the subtle way of conservatives. We're not telling you what to do. Exactly, we're not saying you can't do it. We're just, you know, we're putting it out there, which didn't mean you can narrow it down to the strictest interpretation, because that's what
if you want to make it strict, you can. Yeah. If you want to make it loose, which of course, you make it loose.
Right.
Make it loose. You want to loose interpret it, and that's not what they're using. They want to make it as strict as possible to say, oh, anyone under the age of 18 is not hearing about this, not knowing about it, you know, whatever.
You can't talk about sexual orientation or gender identity.
Or any kind of like sexuality at all, which I think, I mean, I teach third grade. So that's, I mean, they talk about that. I mean, they know that stuff exists. So, I mean, it comes up.
So what do they talk about whenever they have to take the state mandated health classes? That just doesn't, nobody has penises or vaginas at all.
The conservatives don't want to talk about that anyway.
That's true.
So
abstinence only.
But you can't have, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think, does the curriculum promote heterosexual couples?
Well, yes, because that's fine.
But what example? I'm trying to think of the examples. I mean, you have a homecoming king and queen, so you could argue that. But okay. But it's not necessarily. I mean, doesn't mean they have to be boy. It's not best couple. It's like who's the most popular.
Yeah.
So are there other avenues? Not that by saying, hey, this person's gay. Let's talk about Pete Buttigieg, the first openly gay cabinet member. That's a historic moment. Yeah. Like, we won't talk about him. We won't say he's gay. Like, mm-hmm. what is the...
I think it probably does trickle down into that.
We won't talk about Stonewall. I mean, we didn't get
to
a point.
The problem with that is then they would view that as, like, it opens the door to somebody what's gay.
Or even look at women's suffrage movements. Yeah. If you start talking about women's rights to... dress a certain way out in public. I mean, that's gender identity, is that not? So yeah, if they want to dress it in a certain way, so we're just not going to talk about women's suffrage and the movement for women's rights?
Can't talk about that. Can't talk about abortion, which, you know, the conservatives love to talk about that because, mm-hmm. you know, the Jane Roe, mm-hmm. a lesbian.
I saw that.
Did, little known fact, she was had three kids, married, divorced, had one kid. Got married, had a kid, divorced, had two other kids. With the third kid was the one she was going to give, or she was going to have an abortion. She had the kid. And then two ambitious lawyers took the case and made this infamous Roe v. Wade case. But she was a lesbian. Mm. Had a relationship with a woman for over like almost 40 years.
Wow.
But in the course of her being like, the poster child of like abortion, she switched sides and was an anti-abortion activist. But then before she died in 2017, she said, yeah, I just took their money and I didn't really, I don't care if someone gets an abortion. Like, that's
so, I do remember that. Yeah. When she was just,
I just took their money. I love that.
But you know, but she was, I mean, when you have the face of abortion rights now become the face of the pro-life movement, like, that's significant, right?
Because
that are like, oh yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, well, maybe I'm wrong. And she was basing it on religious beliefs and those sorts of things. Well, at least publicly that she was. And then she's a lesbian, so you wouldn't be able to talk about this case
because that's a sexual orientation, that's a gender identity. I don't know, I just it's like what you said about the counselors, because if a kid is struggling with their sexuality and they go to visit the school counselor,
no safe place at home, maybe.
Exactly. Precisely. Because if this situation is coming up, they're already feeling unwelcome to talk to their own parents about this situation. So if they go to the counselor, this counselor would be legally forbidden to give them any sort of resources, to talk to them anything about them. The only thing that they can say is go talk to your parents.
Yeah. And what happens to your kids, Dusty, when they say, oh, my dad's gay, or my two girls who say, why do you have two dads? Oh, because they're gay. Well, what's gay? Like, oh, you need to go to the principal's office. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about that stuff.
It's just, I mean, being a teacher, I mean, like, it's one of those things, like, people are like, oh, it's a gen, you don't understand, like, when you teach, like, all kinds of shit gets brought up throughout the day. I mean, like, good, but I mean, like, kids say anything and everything to you. I mean, you hear all kinds of things. Just, I mean, that's just, you're in, you know, 180-something days, 190 days, and you hear all about their, you know, and I can only imagine what it's like when you have like middle school or high school, you know, where the kids actually have
and going through puberty.
And, so it's
but
just,
but even benign things again, like your kids now. So they say my dad's gay. Yeah. Well, what does that mean? Oh, you need to go to the principal's office because you're talking. So now you're suspended because you're talking about your gay dads, and then you get suspended. Then you're like, I mean, it's this thing, like, you get caught up in a system, like, innocent and potentially straight kids, right, are getting knocked out of the system because they have gay parents and they can't talk about it, and they also can't talk about their two gay dads. You know, what did you do this weekend? I went to the park with my dads. Like, can't say dads because now you're talking about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And you know, we don't talk about homosexuality in school.
Teachers in a same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
What are they supposed to do?
You can't bring pictures, any pictures.
You can't share that part. I mean, that's already an issue. You know, how many people it is. But now it becomes a legal issue. Like, you can't do that. But then, you know.
Well, again, the reason I keep talking about the kids, because, like, that's the are the ones we're trying to protect. You're an adult, Dusty. So you made that life choice, that bad choice to be a gay person, right? So therefore, that's your own fault. But the children that we're trying to protect, we are now, we're putting them, like, at a disadvantage because they can't talk about their family because their family member's gay.
And I mean, it singles
let
them
alone
out.
I mean, because, like I said, this is a straight kid, right? Let alone, I mean, I'm putting aside all of the harm for the actual gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer kid, non-binary, transgender, like, I mean, so much harm to them.
Yeah.
And then, so if you're protecting, oh, but the innocent straight children, in quotes, like, then you won't let them talk about their gay parents? Like, mm-hmm. this is, or their gay sibling? Like, this is nonsense.
Well, I mean, and like, how are you expecting kids to, because it's primary school, so I mean, that I don't know what that entails. Like, I mean, primary could go all the way up to fifth grade. But like, how are you going to police and limit what they talk about? You can't, I mean, control.
It's going to come up in the activities, dude. Mm-hmm. So now you're not doing Mother's Day you know, cards for your, and uh-huh. the kids aren't doing those anymore because my girls have to say, well, I have two dads. And well, why do you have two dads? Right. Oh, we don't talk about that, girls. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about your two dads.
It's like what you said about the potential of them getting in trouble or being suspended mm-hmm. just for potentially if they are straight, then it's like one of the things, like they are then penalized in the system that they get in trouble. They get, you know, marks on their record that either causes them to start lashing out in mm-hmm. school in some way, shape,
or at home, because I get in trouble at school because you're gay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sends the message that
you're ruining my life.
Yes, it's wrong. Exactly.
It's the unspoken message of this is wrong.
I'm getting mad. So, exactly. Uh-huh. Like I was mad and now I'm getting mad. I'm like, I don't know if I'm lactating. Like I was having
it's your thyroid.
I was having moments the other day. Like I am a parent, and I guess yeah. because there was a, mm-hmm. a little time hop thing that was like showed like all these pictures over the last yeah. 12 months, and the girls have grown in the last 12 yeah. months. So I was like, I was getting a little teary eyed. I was like, mm. my. Then
so
I was
cute.
Like, this morning I went to the gym, and Spence walks them to the girls to school every day. I was like, should I be walking? Like, there was the parent guilt that. Parents talk about all the time, like, oh, you know, these moments are precious. And I'm like, I'm going to the gym instead of walking the girls to school. Like, what's more important? Should I just wake up at 5 a.m. and go to the gym and then so I could be back to walk them to the school? Like, it's these things that I'm like, am I missing out on these are thoughts I never had. Like, yeah. but it all mm-hmm. kind of hit me at once. So now I'm getting angry because it's these, yeah. you know, these now we're this. These
I mean,
laws are turning
them.
The yeah
exactly
they're making them feel bad. They won't let them talk about their personal lives mm-hmm. and then they're going to come home resentful of us because they get in trouble for talking mm-hmm. about their two dads
exactly.
in an innocent way, because it's like, oh, make these Mother's Day cards. Well, I don't have two Mother's Day. Or make these Father's Day cards. Well, I have to make two Father's Day
exactly.
cards. So that's,
and in the same vein that like straight parents have to talk to their kids about like, oh, why does this kid have two dads? Why does this kid have two moms? You now have to explain, why am I in trouble for having two dads?
Right,
why?
Yeah.
Why? So now instead of the straight, you have now protected these straight kids and their straight parents and just allow them to do whatever. But what about the backlash on the families of same-sex couples? Because now they are the ones that have to explain to their kids why our lifestyle is I fucking hate that word, and that's the word
your
that everyone
lifestyle.
Has always just been ingrained to say is
your
lifestyle.
Sexual preference,
and it is better than life choices.
Come on, bitch.
But lifestyle, it's not a fucking lifestyle. I was just born this way. I'm just gay. You weren't just born straight. You were born straight. Sorry. You were just born straight. There was not a moment that you were like, you know, do I like guys or do I like girls? Yeah. Let me just go and decide that now. Just who I was as a person. That's not a lifestyle. That's not just like, oh, I'm, you know, deciding to dress in this nice, chic little outfit or whatever.
I mean,
or,
that
you know,
is the gay lifestyle, though.
You know,
mama.
You see how I'm
Come
dressed,
on.
Mama, work. It's not great. But that's what I hate the word lifestyle. I was actually thinking about this in the shower this morning, surprisingly.
Wow. We're getting in the deets.
In the shower thoughts. And I was like,
about
why
showers.
The fuck do we have to say lifestyle? Because that pisses me off that it's called a lifestyle. It's
like catching Chris after that shower, though, like, you know, he's like worked up, like, oh,
like,
hey, get out of my way, I'm mad.
I ran my car over a curb, popped 7 tires. I only have 4, but somehow I popped 7.
Come on, bitch. So I'm mad.
It's
because you either get your kids again, they start to resent you, mm-hmm. or they're defiant little rebels mm-hmm. in school.
Or
both.
Or they're people that, like, they bottle up in closet and, you know, don't say anything because they're somebody that's a kid that's questioning their own whatever, you mm-hmm. know, and they don't feel comfortable. So then what does that do? You know, that's, you're creating that.
And you're also creating a loop. It's like what you said, if they end up getting suspended, they fall behind on their schoolwork. Mm-hmm. And then you're literally creating this whole disenfranchisement of these people who are, you know, either either a you know, a queer kid or someone who is has, you know, parents that are same-sex couple, and so they have now missed school and they're falling behind in their classes, and so then you're just creating this whole lack of education for mm-hmm. them, and so it's like you are literally disenfranchising so many people by attempting to create this, you know, oh, safe environment for straight people. Like, no, include diversity. Oh, that's another thing. This is a good segue.
Oh.
I didn't
say it this time. It, only I'll get a punchline on this, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the president, the Biden, he was like, he tweeted out, because of all this talk, I want every member of the LGBTQI plus community, especially the kids who will be impacted by this hateful bill, to know that you are loved and accepted just as you are. I have your back, and my administration will continue to fight for the protections and safety of you deserve. The punchline there, the reason I bring that up, sorry to interrupt your segue, is the last guy was... would have been totally all in. So if you think it doesn't matter who you vote for, or if you don't want to vote, it does freaking matter. And if you care about anyone who is represented by this podcast, you gotta put some.
And
thought
it's
into
clear
this.
And evident, because we have local elections going on right now here in Texas, mm-hmm. or in Houston. Well, in Texas, it also matters who you're electing to the state. Because as you can see, this is going through Florida, not at the...
Yeah,
you know,
Biden doesn't have that much control, but yes, I mean, he does at the federal level, but mm-hmm. the state level, he can't. He's only so much he can do.
He can't do anything.
But as we segue...
So, yeah, the segue was disenfranchisement of queer kids was more local here. There was a drag event that happened every year for, I think it's 2 or 3 years, called Draggyland up in Texas A&M. And it was hosted by MSC Town Hall, which is like a student organization. And they host it, and they have it in Rudder Tower. And this year they were told that they were not allowed to at all. And so I think there's like 3 or 4 queer organizations that are on campus or queer adjacent. Because I think there's one is like a hair and nail like society, like cosmetic society, essentially.
Filled with a ton of gays.
Gays. and so they all got together and they're like, no, we're still going to put this on. So it became like a organization-led event, which MSC Town Hall is a student organization already. So that was really frustrating. But they're hosting it regardless because they're like, well, we can rent out the stadium, the auditorium and whatever, because we're legally allowed to. So we're going to rent it and we're going to put it on ourselves anyway. So, yeah.
Come on, student activists.
And so the university basically cited that it was like, it was very like political, like, oh, you know, there was a lot of backlash and blah, blah, blah. And there's just so much, you know, unnecessary media attention. And I was like, no, it's because your donors, your homophobic old ag donors, did not want that on their campus. So they threatened to take their monies away. And you said, oh, no, we like money more than our students.
Right. Well, in that same vein, I saw something recently. Same university, Texas mm-hmm. A&M University, it has a student newspaper, The Battalion. Mm-hmm. And this was posted by a fairly conservative friend of mine. And he was like speaking out against it, like the university's decision. That apparently, like the newspaper has to have some editorial oversight, not by an editor, a student editor, which has been the case, but by the university.
Oh yeah, the censorship. Oh, my
goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. And Fish Camp, same situation. Oh, Fish Camp has apparently gotten very like decisions are being made by the university as opposed to by the fully student-run organization. So it's like, oh, you're just telling students what to do now their own organizations. Like, that's not how that works. That's literally the point of student organizations.
You want some money, mama. Mm-hmm. You want some money, Texas A&M University. You better think about it.
But they're attacking... I mean, Fish Camp arguably is one of the most diverse organizations on that entire campus.
That's how so many Aggies find out they are gay. They're like,
because they go to Fish Camp,
they cry, and it's like, at first it's like, oh, we're supposed to all cry, and then later they graduate Fish Camp and they're like, oh, I'm crying because I'm sensitive gay. Not that straight men who can't cry, I'm not saying that, but it's just like you get in touch and you're like, oh, we get to play skits, like this is fun.
I get
and
to dress in a little fairy costume.
Yeah, yes. Oh, you want to dress me in drag for this scene? It's gonna be funny. Yeah,
that's so crazy.
And then fast forward to graduation day, it's like, I'm gay, bitch,
here I am. No, but I mean, Fish Camp has, whenever I was there, had over 1,000 different people that were always involved. They were all students, whether or not they were the directors, the co-chairs, the counselors. I mean, that's a lot of students that are involved in the actual planning of the events. And I mean, people came from all sorts of walks of life. not just, you know, being queer or gay or lesbian or trans. It was, you know, people of all shapes and colors, essentially. And so that was the whole idea of the diversity. And so if you're putting your boot on their neck, which I figured is a good metaphor for Texas A&M being a formerly military...
And for talking about gay stuff.
Exactly. Woof. But like, if you're putting, you know, the metaphorical boot on their neck, then it's like, then you're just ruining diversity and the excitement behind that. So going back to the old ways, old Aggies.
We are the Aggies. The Aggies are we. So yeah, that's exciting. No, it's not. So just these institutions are failing us. Yeah.
I think it's I don't want to think, as a teacher, I'm like, it doesn't make any sense why, like, you're cutting out a whole, I mean, think of the disservice you're doing to, no matter what they're going to identify as, but like, you're cutting out history. I mean, so you're technically deciding this history is more important, you know, like, is what you're saying. And it's just, I'm like, when I was a kid, what would you have done had you learned, you know, a little bit more, you know, it's knowledge too.
But
it's
not even we just... are part of history. Like the best selling musical, like number one artist, Lil Nas X, we just talked about him. The top, like most Emmy Award winning talk show hosts are like Ellen and RuPaul, right? I mean, gay people.
And it's just, it seems very like.
And if you're a kid in one of these schools that does identify differently or, you know, feeling different about themselves in some way, shape, or form, you're only leading to the possibility of negative actions towards them, whether that comes in the form of bullying, self-deprecation, or even suicide. I mean,
if they're trying to find less safe place, you know, maybe it's not a home, but like, then you're either, like you said, they're getting the message that it's wrong. So that's negative, you know, I'm wrong. Maybe this isn't right, you know, maybe.
And then it's just confusion and you're just swirl. And again, we hold, I mean, we talk about obviously LGBTQ plus history for the historic moments that these folks have done in our community, but Bayard Rustin, right, was behind the big march on Washington for freedom and jobs back in 1963 that Martin Luther King Jr., famous I Have a Dream speech, right? That was coordinated by a gay man, right? You think about, you know, we had Edie Windsor's widow on here. She was talking about Edie Windsor, like, was a pioneer in the tech space, right? So doing things like, we have a significant impact in history, in terms of art, in terms of like science, we've done entertainment, like we've done significant things. And so to not talk about us,
exactly, yeah, you cut out, like, well, and the guy
Alan Turing.
You cut out, like, it's not even just, it doesn't have to be about what they like, the gays, you know, like.
It doesn't have to be about gay history. Exactly, it's world history, American history.
This is the first person to do this. Well, we're not going to talk about that because of this one aspect of their life. So fuck everything else they did that was good and what it led to, you know. It's you know, in same like the.
Freaking Jane Roe. We didn't know. I didn't know she was a lesbian. She was with the woman for 40 plus years.
And it didn't matter. Yeah. I mean, that's not, that factored not into.
It's just history.
That entire thing. Exactly.
History is inherently gay. History is inherently black. History is inherently First Nations. History is inherently queer. I mean, we've got so many different people from all different parts of life, essentially, that history is part of these people. So you can create all this this intersectionality all you want to, but if you stop teaching these things, those people cease to exist. And so that is just forgotten about.
Exactly. Yeah, and then you end up with adults that don't know shit.
That's why we all need dogs. Babies, that
don't
is.
Don't look at me like that, okay?
Fur babies we need, right? And if you have a fur baby, why not give them some Baked Bones CBD dog treats? Yeah. Well, when you do that, you show them some love with those Baked Bones dog treats. These aren't just any treats. These are specially Baked Bones. They have CBD, which is great because CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs. So thankfully, Baked Bones has your dog covered with delicious treats that your dog will surely love. Made from organic, human-grade ingredients and full-spectrum hemp oil, their bones may offer some relief to your anxious pup. You can check out BakedBones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and the other benefits it may provide. Baked Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25, and you can save 15% using promo code GAYSTUFF15. That's right, GAYSTUFF15. Baked Bones is LGBTQ+ owned and operated and is based in Houston, Texas. Beep, 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 beep. Eatone. Baked Bones is now available in Man Ready Mercantile, based in Houston and Austin. Baked Bones proudly donates 10% of all of its profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Baked Bones, big dogs, happy.
Love.
What else is going on, ladies?
What else? I thought, and we'll learn more about it here, the first woman, I'll say, has been, I'm using my little finger air quotes, cured in remission of HIV. Mm-hmm. And so that's been in the news all over. And I guess you were educating me on the use of stem cells, which I was not aware of.
Yeah.
But so it's, I guess the three previous people cured were all men. And so she is
and
not the
first. From what I understand, they were white as well.
Yes. And so so I think that's big because it's another step to curing them. But apparently you were telling me there was.
Yeah. So, the past treatments that was used as a bone marrow transplant or bone marrow treatment. Mm-hmm. And so they basically, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of bone marrow treatment, but they treated their bone marrow and that was how they were able find ways to eliminate the virus within the body and quit its replication, essentially. But for her, they did not use that. They used stem cells from an umbilical cord that was donated by someone that was, because she also suffered from leukemia as well, so she could not have the bone marrow treatment. And so that was kind of the idea, was like, okay, well, we need to find another alternative. And so they were using the embryonic stem cells from the, amniotic stem cells from the umbilical cord once the child was born. And so those were, I don't know all the processes once again, mm-hmm. but those were used to basically create a way to fight the cells and get it out of the body, essentially. So,
I love hearing about shit I don't understand.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and I guess that piggybacks on what we were reading about, like, Dr. Fauci said that this is Dusty saying this, he kind of downplaying it because it's not as accessible or because, like, your average person won't have, it's not like they had surgery or a treatment or a pill or a regimen.
And the average person will never have access to stem cells in their life.
But I guess he was saying it's more of like a step, I guess, and saying that, hey, it can be done, it can be put in remission, it can be removed, and now, you know, we're one step closer to a
surprise, surprise, Anthony Fauci saying, be cautious, don't get too excited, you know.
I would basically consider it as an experimental treatment, like,
which I think
in
is
a
fair.
Way, yeah. Because, I mean, of course, it's very well studied, and I'm sure there was a lot of documented, you know, information about why they did it. They don't just go in there like, you know what? Stem cells. Let's see how that goes.
What are these things?
Boring. Like,
and just invasive surgery. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, stem cells is fine.
Yeah.
But the stem cells are omnipotent, essentially. So they're able to omnipotent. Sorry.
Oh no, I know. I was like, what's that mean?
I like to say omnipotent because that's how we learned about it in college, and it was like, you know, you take omni and put it in front of things.
He went to Texas A&M though.
Don't take my words. And so it basically is like it is able to morph into basically whatever cells you need it to. Ooh. And so stem cells are able to be utilized for a multitude of things. Okay. It's typically seen as, well, it's battled against by pro-lifers, essentially, across the board. Because there's the ethical idea of it that you're using amniotic stem cells. So taking stem cells from babies.
Why is that bad? And that
because they're aborted fetuses.
They can't.
Oh, you can't get it from just a regular. Yeah. Like,
so Planned Parenthood takes all the aborted fetuses, and then they suck out the stem cells, and then they give that for research.
That's
a conservative view, right?
That's what they think. Exactly what they think. Yeah. So you're only feeding.
I'm not saying I believe it. I'm just saying this is.
You can't get it from a live baby or a post birth baby.
No, it's typically whenever the cells are multiplying rapidly.
So they need to be fresh.
It needs to, and that's why they took it from the umbilical cord, because the umbilical cord is like always changing, essentially. So that is like the growth inside. So it was like a fresh umbilical cord, essentially. Okay. So
which is funny because you think then that's like, if you were that opposed to abortion, that's a silver lining, you know what I mean? Right? Am I looking at it wrong? Like, I mean,
you said it. I mean,
there's a, well, I would
No, they don't like that. You're trying to rationalize abortion, Mama. And the conservatives have no... The anti-abortionists, pro-lifers, yeah.
The anti-choice, that's what I call them. Anti-choice. tell me I'm wrong. They got
no time for that. It's no different than being an organ donor, correct? I guess it's... Yeah, except but if you're an aborted fetus, you don't get to choose.
Right.
What correct. You're saying. Okay.
Yeah. You're not choosing if you were donating your...
And then Planned Parenthood is just making it a factory for that, right? Oh. So
that's what they think. So sad
when somebody has a...
That is not the case.
So sad when somebody undergoes medical treatment and then loses all, like, you know, like the Tuskegee Airmen and, like, Henrietta Lacks. And then, you know, their DNA goes on to help billions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were never asked. I wonder what that's like.
Oh, but that's okay. You know, yeah, that's okay. Exactly. We can justify that.
Yeah.
No. That's just... let's talk out of both sides of our mouth. Isms.
Use what we need.
Yeah, but it is exciting news. But because she was also the first person of mixed race as well,
yes,
that they were able to say, we've got some processes that are available for not just white people. Because,
well, that's good.
I mean, the medical community tends to only be geared towards white people and white people within like studies and whatnot,
yeah,
and including the idea that the studies that a lot of like the new treatments and whatnot that like the injections, it apparently is like 70% men, and like apparently most of those are like white people. So it's like,
shock.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, white people doing the thing.
Well, I mean, 50% of people who are HIV positive
are people. Yeah,
are women, and you know, 50%. It's pretty much split down the middle. And so it's not just gay men that are out there.
Did you?
It's not just gay men, because so you're saying straight people can get HIV as well.
Yes.
That's funny because
you're not saying that as an aha.
I'm trying to avoid saying what this segment is.
Oh, okay.
Oh, like if it was a segue.
If it were, this would be the part where I say that.
Yeah.
For the first time in 10 years, the number of newly diagnosed HIV cases in straight people is higher than that in gay and bisexual men.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes on the heels of
the hills.
I know.
The
hills. Of all like the latest, like, you know, blood, those things that's going all over the globe, restrictions on like blood donations and everything. Because now, I mean, how do you?
Oh yeah.
How do you justify that?
How do you justify? Mm-hmm.
Come on, straight.
Segmenting when now the newly diagnosed is your average blood donor.
Mm-hmm.
Your average approved blood donor.
It's
approved,
okay, yes. Now. That's why we've laxed the requirements. You know.
So yeah, so that was some good news.
Lax requirements to 3 months of not having sex with a man.
I mean,
don't look at me like that.
I didn't say anything. I didn't look at anyone anyway.
Womp womp. That was very short.
Didn't say anything anyhow.
Does anyone else feel awkward?
On some good news. Not that we're advocating for, yay, straight people are getting HIV. I don't think that was the punchline.
That was not the punchline to go with.
My point was, I want to make sure it can be anybody.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just from having the butt sex. You can get it any other number of ways.
Well, straight people can have butt sex too.
Well, they can. But that's not necessarily just the only way you're going to get it. But like, and so it just goes to show you, once again,
the world.
Straight white people in charge have decided somebody is less than, when really that's not the issue, because it's pretty equal. It's pretty, you know, prevalent among everybody.
That red cross, though.
And good news, GLAAD, you know, we've talked about them before, gay, lesbian, you know.
The other letters. Alliance.
Gay and lesbian.
Anyways, they have an annual study. Uh-huh. It's called Where Are We on TV? And we've talked about the study before when we talked about other things.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it before when we've talked about other things. Very specific.
That is very specific, and I'm very proud of you for pointing that out to us.
Those production notes. Someone's getting a raise. The study said, we've got more representation as LGBTQ+ people on television. Look at us, 92 characters across 775 regular characters across like streaming and broadcast and cable. So 11.9%.
That's pretty good.
We are on the television. This is an increase of 2.8% from previous year. It's a record high.
That's a record lot. High I mean, for
if
gays.
You, if you think, yeah, that's a
yes.
I was trying to think of a funny and appropriate joke, but I can.
Oh boy.
Well, you this were is the place for that.
We're
and gay, and
we're
marked. Oh, I bet we're rising.
Yeah, yeah. See, these are your. You must have a big.
I don't know. Dramatic. Never mind.
What was I going to say? Oh, 2%. That's a 2%. That's a large increase in a year. I mean, so that's. I mean, that's some fast action. Yeah.
2 inches matters.
Some fast action. Was this Viagra?
2 inches.
That's how you keep it up. That's how you keep it up.
That is how you keep it up.
An additional 49 LGBTQ plus recurring characters on the platform. So a total of our community, 141 people on TV, streaming, cable, broadcast.
I wonder, does it say, is there any information, like the breakdown of like...
Oh, she wants me to have studied this.
Every single person list
them. Not report, but I wonder if they go, how far they go into their demographic, those characters, what are the
lesbian characters? Represent the majority of the characters on broadcast. Racial diversity characters is up on broadcast and streaming, down on cable. GLAAD has said, we're trying to get, they want more people of color on. So I think it's 50%, which is their goal, saying we should have above 50% LGBTQ representation on television. So we're not there everywhere, but we have that close on streaming. It's 49% on streaming of LGBTQ plus people of color. But yeah, so it's progress. So 58% of on broadcast. So of the LGBTQ plus characters on broadcast. So ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox.
Okay.
Are 58% are people of color. Versus,
oh wow!
I think that changes good. Though when you cancel Pose.
No, it's an entire series.
Basically all people of color.
Yeah. Where else are they? Yeah.
But I think that was the point of it, too.
Yeah, that was the whole point.
It was that whole, that
the bowl scene.
The bowl.
42 regular and recurring transgender characters across broadcast, cable, and streaming, which is up from 29 from last year.
Shit, that's almost, double? I do the maths.
You teach math,
you
too.
You teach math. That's really impressive.
Yeah. So that's some good news. We are there. So if you're wondering if we're shoving the gay agenda down your throats, we sure are.
We absolutely are. Shove it down your throats very fast and rough.
Just open it up a little bit. No gag.
No gag reflex?
Just open it up a little bit.
Swallow it all.
We should have warned my mom to stop listening after we talked about that topic.
After we talk about your topic.
Don't listen anymore.
Turn it off and go watch.
So Dustin.
So you read a book about boys kissing, Dustin.
I did. And
you kissed a boy and you liked it.
Weren't you texting us today about not knowing what you were going to talk about? And then you read this book
But I am I have such a wide plethora of knowledge.
You got a wide something.
He's got a,
I know. I got to go to the gym.
He was working fast and loose.
I wasn't talking about that. When you're wide, you're wide.
And when you're loose, you're very bad.
This ties in well with our...
What's the saying? Loose lips.
Loose lips, Dusty.
Is that my new name?
Your new name is Dusty Loose Lips.
Ooh.
I don't like that.
No.
Oh, I don't know if they're dusty and loose.
That's somehow worse.
Yeah.
That means they're old because they've been... If they're loose, they got their back in the day.
And they've not been. They've not
back in my day.
Gained their.
Well, I said what I said.
Stand by it.
Come full circle.
I did what?
Hello.
Hello.
Where's the party? I have Monday. I have Monday off.
Oh, crazy!
We have a babysitter.
Oh,
two boys kissing. Go.
Two boys. So going. It works. Go. Going off of the queer history representation and discussions in school. This book is often challenged and often banned and cited because of obviously the representation of that lifestyle, but also. I found this interesting. One of the things people don't like about it is it promotes a public display of affection. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's a really super specific hate. Like, you really don't want to see people do stuff in public. Anywho, so that you're going to ban a book because it talks about...
They would hate me and my husband.
Right? Because you stand here, two boys kissing.
All the time. In public.
So basically, it is a book. It's one of those books that I like. It's a YA book, which again, so as we talk about school...
Burn it, ban it.
Exactly. And it tells several overarching stories between it. But one of the neat things is like some of the narrators that like are there are is a, it's almost like kind of like a Greek tragedy kind of thing, like where you have like the narrators, like this group of people narrating and talking to the characters, but they don't hear them. It's like they're guiding them. It's a group of men that have died of AIDS. And so like they are interacting with the characters, but not obviously in a way that the characters know, but like they'll comment on it. So it's a neat way it's done.
That is an interesting way to write it.
Yeah, it's so you've got like four-ish different stories with the featured characters, and then like this, you've got these like, you know, this unnamed, you know, people like responding to these kids' lives, you know, like, you know, saying like back in my, and like giving them support, sending it. So it's a really neat concept of like
gone. They're watching.
Exactly. So the main two characters are Harry and Craig, and they set out to break this Guinness World Book Records for longest kiss. And so this is also based on a true story.
Aww.
Gay. And so, and they happen to be two boyfriends in their school. And so obviously, you know, like that's the main storyline about like they're going to kiss for X number of hours. And I think it's like 32, I think, or something, 37. A long time. But like their lips have to be touching the entire time or whatever. There's rules. So you have...
they made rules for them kissing each other.
Well, because, you know...
Gay.
Gay. Right?
And so... It's just a good reasoning. It is. I just keep saying it.
And so... Gay. It's in my favorite... I was talking to my friend Robbie the other day. It's like that the whole... one of my favorite things is like, move, I'm gay.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. That's perfect.
It works for
everything. It works for everything. I'm gay. Get out of my way.
Ooh, that's a bummer sticker. I'm gay. Get out of my... Mm-hmm. Anywho, so we've got these two.
A bumper sticker that I put on the front of my car. It's just like a sign that it was like holding up. And you can see it in my rear view mirror. It's like reverse image. So you can see it and like, oh boy, that. It's a great idea.
It is.
Mm.
So if we look in, we need a best person. Mm. So they are actually not a couple though. They're like, they're former boyfriends and they've broken up, but they've remained friends and they want to do this. And so they're like the face of school and they've got the supporters. So like it goes back, you know, between all these other storylines. And they're getting support from their families and all these other kids. And it's a small, you know, like the community and everything comes out to talk about that. You've also got these two boys, Avery and Ryan, who are going as to the prom for the first time together. And one of them is okay and understands the backlash they get from being gay. Like they're like, not everybody's going to like this. You know, like they don't like me for this. And the other boy has a real problem with that. Like, you know, like, is very outspoken, I'm looking at you, and very has a lot of strong opinions, like, why, you know, why can't...
The library is open.
I'm looking at you loud and has opinions.
Our reading segment is turned into reading, live reading.
A library is
this
open.
Is a live reading session.
And so there's the differences between, like, how... people are perceived, or how they understand and react to the way that they are perceived by their families, by their friends, by society. And that book is also deals a lot with like race and socioeconomic status and like how being gay and everything impacts those things and how those things impact it. So you've got them and they're being bullied by kids, and you know, one guy just kind of accepts the bullying, like, this is, you know, this, it's gonna happen. It's, and the other guy wants to stand up and fight it, and they have that kind of turmoil in their relationship, is by, you know, where he's like, we can't fight every, you know, you're just gonna have to go, and he's like, no, I won't stand for this, you know.
Oh, I wanna fight everyone.
I know.
It was me, hardcore.
Exactly, see, mm-hmm. I thought about you. So, and then you've got.
What?
You've got, I love it. So you've got this other, another story is about a boy who is gay and he's trying to figure out ways to come out to his family or whatever. And, you know, he's...
Not in Florida.
Exactly. And so he ends up being outed by falling asleep at his computer, and his dad walks in and sees, obviously, apparently he's on Pornhub or something. I don't know. But
he fell asleep while jacking off.
How boring is your jack off session?
Where I'm, really, I'm gonna get asleep. After.
You say that
it was
like,
that good.
I'm confused by both of these conversations. He gets bored while jacking off. Like, how sad is
not
that?
Not me. Like, I'm saying,
and you,
no, I don't
you,
get bored.
You get so much pleasure that you with you give yourself so much pleasure that you pass out afterwards.
Like, literally just hunched over at the computer.
Like, oh, whoa. That was good.
Everybody
I'm,
just
man,
deflates.
I'm good.
I'm good.
It
was me. I'm good.
The subtle thing, me. I got it. Because he just said everything just deflates. So he's got friends.
There you go. So and then he ends
Chris
up.
Chris gets bored. That's what the takeaway here.
Chris in the middle
bores
of
himself.
You know what? This is not fun. I'm done.
You're not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm not even in myself.
I'm signing off.
Thomas, he's like Chris. No, I know too much about Chris.
And so he has to deal with like the backlash from that and whatever. And then he ends up looking for his first, you know, gay. Relation or experience I
encounter
should say.
Yes.
Encounter thank you that was you know online app and then he ends up at the very end of
Grindr.
It yeah it's not called that it's probably like Grindr or something
oh yeah because they can't use
copywritten
yeah,
so don't copy,
the
copy me
Yikes. I'm so excited and so he ends up he can't deal with it. His parents are hate but he's like why am I doing this and then at the end of this well not to spoil it but whatever.
My spoiler
literally,
alert!
He, this, the point of the segment.
He is about getting ready to. He leaves everything in his car, like his phone, everything. He's gonna jump off a bridge.
Oh no!
And like he ends up being.
Oh no!
Oh no! Oh no! he ends up being saved. He doesn't.
Oh okay.
So, but
Jesus. Like his miracle on 34th Street.
It, not an angel, but a police officer, mm-hmm. and the police officer says,
"How
to
was
him,
he dressed? Was he like, hey anyone call for a light?
It was short shorts, and it was
yes.
the shirt was unbuttoned down.
Yes.
He was probably on.
And it was actually like
club.
A crop top, mm-hmm. just super tight,
exactly.
right around the chest region.
Has someone been a bad boy?
That Billy mm-hmm. club.
It was actually Jimbo. Jimbo was here.
Oh, I love Jimbo. That's the second time we've talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So and he says to him, like, as bad as today has, it's only today. You know, and like the chorus comes back in and it's talked about like every life is so like there's
and a, then they get married.
I feel like this needs right. to be a Broadway musical.
Uh-huh. Right? It is a good it's uh-huh. it came out in 2013.
This is
someone
awesome.
Call Lin-Manuel Miranda.
No, don't call him. We're doing this.
We're doing this. I was worried he was canceled.
Oh no, he's not canceled. I secretly cancel him because I'm like, enough already.
Yeah,
like,
he's everyone.
But apparently someone said my husband looks like him, so I guess I can't, which he is not a fan of that. He is not a fan of that.
I don't see it.
He is not a fan of that.
I love it.
I think
yeah.
But it's not even, like, maybe if you
yeah.
got a dark
had, like,
tan
three,
or something,
three bottles
know.
Of wine and, like,
I'm very handsome.
You are. And you can write music with the best of them, and, but you don't look like
exactly.
I don't know if he can write music. If he can, it'd be really
I don't know.
Cool.
That's why we're going to write. Don't we don't need to call Lin-Manuel. Unless he gives us credit, because then he can make a lot of money. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
But right, it does
right.
sound like it would
Chris,
make
Chris, get on it.
Series.
Lil Nas X.
Yeah, I'm getting him on it. I'm still waiting for Lil Nas X to.
Who? If your name is a hype, no. Or Lil.
X.
Well,
Lil.
Well, Lin and Lil. Like, what do you call somebody who has a hype? Like.
But his name is Lin.
Manuel.
But his name is Lin-Manuel.
That is a stage name. You don't. You think
really?
Everyone says, "Hey, Lin-Manuel."
Well, that's what I'm saying. Do they
maybe,
call him Lin?
You know what? I don't like him even more. I mean, I don't know why I don't like him, but
he's
still there's something. But then he's like, "Oh no, it's Lin-Manuel."
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that does seem a little pretentious.
Like, how much would you like someone who's like, "Hey, Lin," but like Lin-Manuel? Now that said, people are like, "Is your name Tom?" And I'm like, "No, it's Thomas. It's Thomas. Don't call me Tom."
Yeah, people ask me, "Is your name Chris?" I'm like, "You can call me whatever you want."
Just as long as you call me.
I think we talked about this, or I've talked to a lot of people about it, but I've always been told, asked, is my name Dustin
Dust?
Or something, or Dustifer or something, you know.
Dustifer? What the fucking
I don't know.
Situation?
And so,
it's
like,
Dust.
Like,
it's just Dust. Just Dust.
I added the E for guys. Not the E, the Y.
That's a stage.
You can't even spell your own name.
I'm signing off for real this time.
So, like,
y'all are nuts.
But no, I've been told that my name. No, that's just a nickname. Anyway, back, but no, that would make it would make a very good show. But it, the book has overarching themes of like, you know, it's like, you know, a little bit of thing, you know, is big, you know, like they're doing this. Exactly.
That's what happened. That's usually how it works.
These two boys kissing, you know, and that the, but the far reaches it has to the community. And obviously the other boys,
making everyone gay.
Exactly. Well, the other characters in the story are all aware of that central storyline. So it's just the way he weaves it all together. It's just a very neat, like every life matters, no matter how, you know, like. They're doing this one thing that's okay. It's Guinness World Book of Records, but it affects all these other people, you know. In the city, so it's just
this guy. Like I'm thinking, it's a Broadway musical. Like, he wrote it like that.
Well, we'll have to call maybe him up. He'll listen to it. He him, probably is a listener.
Lynn, yeah, he probably. That'll just be the David base assumption. If we're talking about you, then you must be listening to this podcast. Listening.
Lady Gaga, but yeah,
Lady Gaga, Kim Petras, Kesha. Oh, Kim Petras. We just get every Lil Nas X. We got everyone in one little city. Dumbledore.
I have seen our things uptick recently, so you know more sharing. So they must uptick. Be doing that.
They must.
But I think they're doing it with their alts. You know, because you may not. Because if you go back and try to scroll, I'm like, well, I don't see Lil Nas X liking it. I just assume he's doing with it his alt.
He had a million different profiles, remember? So
he did. That's true. He did have a bunch of alts.
So
I don't have that much patience to have that many alts. I just do everything on my account. So just
a million different profiles.
Yo, is Dusty like this? Yeah, I did.
Dusty did like the penises on my timeline.
You know what?
I did.
We know, but Dusty. We all know.
I'm sure you did too.
Yeah. Anyone who's following you knows what you like.
Hey, you know
what?
It's just.
Hey, just pull up to the bumper,
baby.
I love this book. I love a good YA book, because even though it's almost 10 years old. Wait, 13 or 21? Yeah, that's almost 10 years.
Because I could finally read that book.
I find
the book could read a book.
Mm-hmm. I find myself thinking, oh, the '90s were just not that very long ago. And so,
was 30 years ago.
I mean, that's generous, and now at least 22 years ago.
I know. So, but so like
you can drink, you can take it to the bar. It's been that long ago.
So, but I really like it. It's great. I love a good YA because, again, I've said this before. I love the fact that like this book is, you know, like had I been a teenager, or had I been somebody reading this closet. You know, even maybe it wouldn't have had any impact, but it would have at least had a voice. I would have at least had an outlet, a something, you know, a connection. So I love that there's a lot, so much representation in, like, the young adult literature.
Literature.
Is this the book that helped you come out at age 38?
No. But, you know, I talked about that book? I don't know. There's a sequel to it. I got to read it. All I have of it.
That was a lot of statements. No, I did not.
That's how that's
rewind.
I did. There is a book that I read right before I came. I'm gonna have to, I don't think I've talked about it yet, though.
Well, come on, girl. We got the next.
But I have to read the sequel to it because it just.
Then tell us all about it.
Tell us all about it. While I tell you something a little about our friends at Economy Works.
Pull up to the bumper.
Could you imagine if I sang the whole time? Like, I should do the jingles.
But let's just
I mean, I do that to the girls all the time. They're like, "How do you come up with these songs?" I'm like, "It's don't encourage me."
I will continue.
Don't encourage me. But our sponsor, Economy Works, of course, we'd like to thank them. If you need help with marketing, hire a freelancer. If you need help building a website, hire a freelancer. If you need help with benchmarking and analysis, hire a freelancer. Economy Works believes in the power of connection and wants to connect you with its talent network. The Talent Network has over 1,000 years of experience and growing in HR, marketing, IT, accounting, and other specialties. Economy Works. When we work, the economy works. You can find out more at economyworks.com. That's economyworks.com. People are still calling Economy Works. I mean, which is, of course they are, but I'm like, people are calling. Like, they're wanting their HR support. And so we're like,
who has phones that work nowadays?
We're going to get them.
We only text now.
We get emails. We get talk. I mean, call.
They're calling from a rotary phone.
Call loosely.
Can you do that from these things? I thought they were like little computers.
Did you ever have a rotary phone?
I called loosely.
Yeah, I actually did.
Did you really?
Yes. Don't read me, Dusty. We also had a corded phone.
Well, everybody had those. Not everybody. My kids don't.
Not everybody.
Well, think about kids now. Like, they don't know phone numbers.
I know my phone number. Well, speaking
Do
of
your a, kids know I your know, cell phone number?
No, they don't. I'm just dad. I hope it's what it says in their phone.
Right.
Fucker.
But if your kid and if your kids don't have a cell phone, do they know? Like,
I don't know their phone numbers.
Exactly. So you don't know a phone number?
And I still know my child's phone number.
Yeah.
And oh, I know my house number, my mom's cell phone number.
I said something to my mom, and she's like, "Oh, we got rid of that." I'm like, "You didn't ask me.
I don't know who to call now.
No, some fucking stranger." She's well, like, no, because I only call them on my cell phone. I'm like, some fucking stranger has my childhood.
Yeah, what happens if you lose your cell phone? Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
You did.
Speaking of old, Roy Cohn.
Old.
What do Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, Joe McCarthy, Steve Rebell, John Gotti, George Steinbrenner, and he's the New York Yankees owner, Aristotle Onassis, he was the husband, he's the husband of Jackie O, and Donald Trump have in common?
Studio 54.
Oh, that's a good guess. But, you know, Julius and Ethel
They're
Rosenberg.
They're all in New York.
Julius and Ethel Rosenberg didn't make it that big because they were convicted of being Soviet spies and then hung.
Ooh.
What do they all have in common?
Yeah. Sorry.
They're Just all related to Russia.
Roy. Ooh. Oh, that's a good one, too. Roy Cohn. He was a lawyer involved in some of their cases.
Oh. For,
with the exception of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who he helped. He was the prosecutor in that case and helped
so
convict
he got them. Dead.
Joe McCarthy, Steve Rebell, John Gotti, George Steinbrenner, Aristotle Onassis, and Donald Trump. He was their lawyer.
Interesting.
Lawyer-ish for Joe McCarthy because Joe McCarthy was a senator, so he was but the lawyer representing Joe McCarthy and his McCarthyism. Y'all know anything about Roy Cohn?
No.
I think I
Without cheating. Do.
No, I'm looking about it. I don't want to read because there's
he's going to tell us about it. That's the whole point of this.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Y'all know anything?
Y'all I ever, do not.
Have y'all ever heard of him?
I have heard of
him. What have you heard about him?
Well, he was, I believe he was gay.
Okay.
But like, I don't know. I feel like. No, I don't know anymore. I'm questioning. That's what I was looking up. I'm like,
well, don't look it up. He's gonna tell us.
I'm just wondering, if, like, if you know, like, you know.
I do not.
I feel like there's something like.
We'll get to it.
Okay, I will also say that I did not know many of those people on your list.
Oh, that's fair. Shit, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. Again, they were. I'll talk about them a little bit. So, okay. Roy Cohn, known as a political fixer, he's been.
Is he Olivia Pope?
Oh my God.
No.
That's what Olivia Pope.
People liked Olivia Pope. Like,
okay.
No one liked Roy Cohn.
No.
I'll talk.
Oh, about there was a lot of people who hated her.
So all the way back to high school, he was a political fixer. Apparently, even high school, he was fixing tickets for teachers, like his high school teachers. He was like, "You got a parking ticket? We can get this covered." He was selling post office jobs. Like at age 15, he was that connected with folks, and he was doing the thing, like hooking people up. And over time, like in the latter part of his life, he was a New York elite. He was the connected lawyer. Very much connected to the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump. This guy gets credited for basically mentoring Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's philosophy, style, approach is, you know, people point back to Roy Cohn.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a fun character.
Fun person.
The stories told of his life are pretty sad because basically no friends. And if you think about other characters you may know in the Trump administration, Roger Stone, or like associated with Trump, Roger Stone.
Mm.
Yeah, kind of know him. Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, folks like that. They're just kind of like around rich and famous people themselves have accumulated some wealth. Now, whether it's actual legit wealth or like, but they're high rolling with, they're hanging with high rollers. It's what Donald Trump was before he became president. Yeah. Like just this guy who's out there, you see him in all like these big events and somehow, I mean, makes
it's
a
like,
lot
who
of money.
Even are you?
Right.
Done
even if they like, even if like Trump, like no, to his credit, like amassed a personality and a reputation for being a guy with money, right? Whether you know, again, we can debate whether or look at the records and don't have to debate whether he actually had money or not. It is, that's the persona to at least 70 million people who voted for him, like that he maintained. And even myself, like who is not a Trump supporter. I always associated with them with this like power lifestyle of the rich and famous, and this guy was, you know, Roy Cohn was kind of in that circle. Childhood, he kind of grew up in a awkward childhood. And some of this stuff, like as I'm reading it, I'm like, is this true or is this just the stories that are told about him because no one really liked him? But they're like, oh, he was crooked since the day he was born. Like he was born into crookedness. They say his parents were an arranged marriage of sort. Like his mom was came from a wealthy Jewish family, but couldn't get married because she wasn't very pretty, apparently. And so,
how kind.
So she got to a certain age, and her family was like, "Well, we have to marry her." So Roy Cohn's dad, they proposed to him like, "Hey, if you marry her, we'll make you a judge." And so his dad did, and they got married, and shortly thereafter, he became a judge. Oh. So this is the kind of stuff, though, that I'm like, you're calling his mom ugly. Like, that's that's not cool. Like, I don't know. It is, as you read it, I'm sure as a guy who does not like Donald Trump and someone who influenced Donald Trump, like, I don't want to have any sympathy. Like, there's not a lot of sympathy for anyone on that part of that bubble. Part,
yeah, exactly.
But when you're like, after this man's died, like, his mom was ugly. And so, you know, and that's how, like, it's
his mom was ugly.
Yeah, I mean, that's how they made it seem. So, he was an only child, though, a mama's boy. So, bless his heart.
He really loved his ugly mom.
Bless him.
I love you, ugly
But they had an interesting relationship because his mom would, like, give him a hard time for not being, like, very attractive because she came from money and she's like, you know, boy should look a certain way.
You were not attractive, you just had money.
And so, that was him, but he lived with her until he was 40, so it was just, you know, it was this awkward, like, but he was, my words are a mama's boy, but he had this, I mean, but she would kind of razz him. I don't want to, like, I am stereotyping, like, I guess the thing that comes to mind is, like, the stereotypical, like, Jewish mom, like, that is portrayed on TV, like, you know, the caricature of that, of, like, giving him a hard time, you know, why aren't you married, or, you know, you're not, and just picking on his flaws. And it's not just Jewish moms who do that. Latin moms do it, too. Just watch El Canto. What is that movie?
Encanto.
I should know this.
Encanto.
It's my Encanto for the Latino cultures that are listening.
We don't talk about Bruno.
By the way, I have told the girls, like, somewhat joking, because I like to say the words that, because it actually irritates, it doesn't irritate Spence, but I'm like, I'll put on the Latin accent. And I'm like, no, in Latino culture, this is what we do. And so one day I was telling the girls, I'm like, oh, that person's part of Latino culture. And so instead of saying we're Hispanic or we're of Mexican heritage or we're Latino, they are like, oh, in Latino culture. They're like, oh, so-and-so, she's Latino culture.
I love that.
So we are Latino culture. I don't know where I was going with that, but yeah,
you went somewhere with it.
Yes, but Latin moms, grandmas, some similar to, I think, the caricature of Jewish women. Like, they will pick at your, they will find your flaws, and they will
take you down.
Yeah, and so I think she did a little bit of that. But you at the same time, you always go, mama, abuela, grandma, like, you know, you love them, and they love you. So I think there a little bit of that was going on. But yeah, so growing up, you know, he wasn't a big man. He had this small man demeanor, not bodacious, pretty monotone. But he was also vain, and, you know, very confident when you saw him speak, and presented well. Like, he was well spoken. But he's made a name for himself in several parts of history. I mentioned the Rosenberg trial. Yeah. So this was a big thing in the the 50s. You know, communism was all
the Red Scare.
Was all the rage.
Fear of communism was all the rage.
Yeah,
there.
So it was something very scary, and the Rosenbergs were kind of called out as spies, right? And so Roy Cohn was the prosecutor who took them to task and helped get them convicted. And he also claims he influenced the judge to give them the death penalty. So they were like the first couple, like, at a federal level to be prosecuted and given the death penalty. So, and so that was very controversial because it was like, well, were they really guilty?
Witch trials. You had no idea.
Yeah, some of the records, I guess. We'll save that for our Spoopy podcast and whether that was a legit thing in terms of, because they like to talk about conspiracies. You guys can listen to our Spoopy podcast for true crimes, murder mysteries, and all the scary things.
And just gay.
Right, and gay stuff. Gay. They're talking about controversies. Conspiracy theories. This would be a good one for y'all to conspirarize. I said it.
Conspirarize.
also made a name for himself with Joe McCarthy. You know Joe McCarthy? You listened to episode 48. You know all about Joe McCarthy.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course.
Senator Joseph McCarthy.
Is he the one that was tapping his foot under the stall?
No, but if you think about Ted, what do you think about Ted Cruz?
Oh, gross.
Yeah, that's what people thought of Joseph McCarthy back in the 50s because, Joseph McCarthy picked, because of Cohen's success with the Rosenbergs, McCarthy picked Cohen to be his chief counsel on what was soon to be this raid of communism in the government and just in America in general, specifically like the entertainment industry. McCarthyism.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy who pushed on the Red Scare.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He's the man. The senator was like taking people down publicly. But
did he get shot?
No.
I'm just making shit up at this point.
But Cohen made a name for himself under the McCarthy era stuff with because he was asking these. He was an aggressive questioner and just made people, you know, really uncomfortable. And it just was like, you did it, you did it, you did it sort of thing. And then, you know, this was all around communism. And then all of a sudden the focus turned to the gays and this Lavender Scare started, and so because McCarthy and Cohen were like, "Oh, there's gays in the in the government, and we need to get them out because the gays." So the communists know the gays are gay, and so what we can do is we can blackmail them, and they'll give us secrets. And so he perpetuated this idea, and basically helped. Tilted the president at the time, Dwight Eisenhower, to signing this executive order that basically said if you're a homosexual and working in the government, you're out of here. So all because of Roy Cohn and Joseph McCarthy. Interestingly, and this will come out, we can talk about this a little bit later, Cohen got connected with this guy named David Shine. I guess I should have researched that a bit more, who was this unpaid consultant for as part of this crusade. He was part of the army. This ties in because Shine was part of the army. They were using Shine to say give us the skinny on what's going on in the army because we think there's communists in the army as well. And so the army started saying, you know, you need to get out of our yard, you're using your influence in the Senate to stir shit up, and we basically don't like that. And so so they pushed back, and ultimately, Cohen left D.C. disgraced. So he finds himself in New York, and this is where he starts to join the political elite. Of New York. He was Studio 54. Again, we've talked about that. So that was a good guess. He represented Steve Rebell, who was the owner, founder of Studio 54 and Ian Schaffer, something like that. And they basically, Studio 54 collapsed, which we talked about in the previous episode, because of the owners were basically caught on tax evasion. So he was the lawyer that represented them. During this time in New York, too, though, he meets up with one known as Donald Trump. So what's his relationship with Trump? In the 1970s, they formed this bond. Cohen was like, Donald Trump's going places. And just thought he was just the bee's knees. Yeah. And he loved his relationship and bragged about his relationship with Donald Trump. He taught Donald Trump about transactional power laundering, like how to use your power in exchange for things that, you know, and to get things happened. You want.
Yeah. And
he
said,
he said, you know, Donald Trump, he's going to touch every part of the country and world. Little did he know he was going to do that literally and figuratively.
Became the fucking president.
Became the fucking president of the United States. Wow. You think about that.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And he might become president again.
That makes me sick.
I still can't imagine that.
Donald Trump said about him, if you need someone vicious, hire Roy Cohn. Donald Trump Roy Cohn had a pronounced influence on Donald Trump and all the way through his presidency. If you look at the track, like the things that Roy Cohn stood for, it is very evident, like, oh, that's all Donald Trump. And this, came to, everyone's aha moment. At one point, Jeff Sessions, who was the attorney general under President Trump. Oh, damn it. I said that. Under Donald Trump.
Under the Trump man.
He said, where's my... He's getting mad at Sessions because Sessions isn't sticking up for him. He's like, where's my Roy Cohn? Where's my fixer? Where's the guy? He's thinking, the attorney general has basically his personal lawyer. So why does he say this? Because Cohn was known, like, a polite guy, but a tough guy to read and arrogant and vain. Described as a tough son of a bitch. And he said once, I don't bleed. People come for me, but I don't bleed. They want to cut me, I don't bleed. But he had this, you think about his, when he was getting, like, because he got, because of what happened during the, like, the McCarthyism stuff, then he was associated with that and like an active aggressor in that program. People didn't like him. They're like, you ruined hundreds of thousands of lives. I mean, gay men in the government, and women in the government, some of them committed suicide because they're like, I'm going to get found out that I'm gay. So, I mean, and just the other people he ruined because he called them out as communists, like, he ruined, no one liked him. And But he's like, oh, that's part of the New York DC bubble. Like, you get out in the middle of America and you get different viewpoints. Again, something Donald Trump says, a demographic he appeals to, right? He doesn't appeal to the New York and DC and West Coast.
Because they don't like him.
Right. But middle of America, he does, right? And that's a Roy Cohn. But how many times do you think Donald Trump was hanging out in Iowa, or Roy Cohn in their nice press suits, or hanging out in Iowa or Mississippi or Alabama? But they have that trope about them. They're like, oh, middle America is saying something different. I'm like, tell me all the times you've been to middle America. It's flyover country, and you are the one who's flying over. I mean, as it's termed, right? I have interest in, because I want to go to all 50 states because I want to learn about people. But you think those fools want to learn about people?
Not a thing about it. They don't give a shit.
But
and Trump even said that in a lot of his campaign speeches, that he basically didn't give a fuck about so many different people, and he still became the fucking president.
But this guy was saying this in the 70s. Like, yeah. Oh, you guys all say this about, but you DC and New York elites are saying about this about, Joseph McCarthy. He was against communism, and I maintain that was the right thing to do. But if you go into middle America, people had a different opinion, which, you know what, maybe they did. But again, what do you know about middle America? Tell me the diners that you had, that you've been to.
The world's greatest breakfast at.
Tell me the truck stops you've been to. Although he was a homosexual, which is why I'm talking about
him. So he went to plenty of truck stops.
So before I get into that, politics. He was a registered Democrat, much like Donald Trump was at one point, right? But he supported Republican presidents and all the local, like the government, like state officials. He was behind the Republicans. Like, that was his thing. He was a part of
because he knew how to make them terrible.
Right. Well, he was Democrat, registered Democrat, because he wanted to be around famous people, right? Mm-hmm. And lots of famous people are liberals, right? At least the ones that we see publicly, right? And then, but he knew he wanted to keep his money and stay corrupt. And so he sided with a lot of the Republican candidates. And he's like, he was part of the anti-liberal establishment. He's like, I don't want to be associated with the legal establishment, the country clubs, that the folks who play tennis matches on Saturday, those folks are against me. I'm not, I'm not part of them. But he was also viewed, basically, I'll say my word is a swindler. Like, again, they call him political fixer. But he part as a swindler in this fact, like Donald Trump, you look at his tax returns and it's hard to be like, well, you cheated on these things, because he used the flexibility in the law. And when he didn't own, like, Roy Cohn didn't own anything, like, all his, like, everywhere he lived, the places he lived, his office buildings, whatever, like, those were all owned by companies that he was associated with. And he was accused of being a tax avoider, and he's like, don't blame me for your inadequacies, because you don't know how to use the tax system to your advantage. Like, that's on you. Which,
It is true.
If you make some money, it's not like you're trying to pay taxes. Like, oh, let me give more money to the government that they spend money on shit that I don't care about, maybe, because it's not aligned with my agenda. So if you're making millions of dollars, maybe you do feel that way. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's a point of view. But I don't think, the Bernie Sanders of the world, or AOC's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of the world, are like, yeah, you know what? We want to pay more money. They're like, hey, if they were making $1 million on the book, on a book deal, they're trying to figure out which assets they have that can help reduce their tax liability. So Roy Cohn, Donald Trump. That's all they're trying to say they're doing, right? Now, again, is it ethical? That's a different question. Is it legal?
Technically, yes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what Donald Trump's getting called out now in the state of New York, saying, hey, you said your assets were worth this lower amount for tax purposes, but for when you're trying to sell it, you're saying it's worth this amount of money, which is a lot higher amount. So well, what gives? But I don't know if that's illegal, right? The legal framework may say that that's within bounds. I don't know. That's for the New York State Attorney Attorney General to figure out. Anyways, his appeal, though, because if you look at old pictures, he's hanging with the Reagans, the owner of the New York Yankees, with Donald Trump, who was a popular you know iconic figure in the 80s, like hanging with some bigwigs, right? Because he was a political fixer. He bridged between the political bosses and the crime bosses. So he represented the George Steinbrenner's New York Yankees owner. He also represented John Gotti, who was a mafia boss. How he gets tangled up with Donald Trump is like Donald Trump was trying to build his tower, Trump Tower in New York City, needed concrete to do that. It was a concrete building. At the time, the union that was affiliated with the concrete business was on strike, and they're like, we're not doing that. Well, the unions were connected to the mafia. He's representing John Gotti. He says, John Gotti, let's get some concrete so I can build this building. And
wow.
And that's how he works. And he straddles that, right? He's there in the unions, and he's there at the big wigs. And so that's why people like him. And that's how he can get associated with, you think Donald Trump now, criminal. He wasn't necessarily, he was slimy in the 80s, but not criminal. And a lot of people looked up to him in the 80s, right? That was something to aspire to, have your name on a building. New York Yankees, Jackie Onassis' husband. I mean, these are people that you're like, but these folks made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And if they're associated with the Jeffrey Epstein of the 70s and 80s, how good do you really think they were?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
The Reagans, all these people that were associated with them. So he had a certain appeal because he could get things done. He knew how to get permits and all the sort of stuff, which is why Donald Trump really liked him. But Donald Trump liked his philosophy. Legally, though, after a while, the New York Bar Association, and I'm probably getting that group wrong, but the group that licensed lawyers in New York, they said
he was working
fast and loose, and they wanted to
fast and loose again.
Yes.
Oh my God, keeps coming
like his
up.
Booty. They wanted to disbar him. So, but all this again. Why am I talking about him? Not because I want to talk about a Trump sycophant, but because he's a homosexual. Mm. Although he denied it, he denied it. It was well known because he was asked about it often on talk shows, which is where I kind of feel, I don't want to say I feel sorry for him. I just feel like it was kind of like because people didn't like him. Yeah. And at the time it wasn't accepted to be gay.
And because if he was attacking gays back in the 50s and 60s, it was an easy thing to be like, well, what about you? What happened to you?
Well, and people would say, a lot of people say stuff about you. And he'd be like, they say I do this and they say I do that. No, they say a lot of things about you. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe you're homosexual. And it's just, the conversations, again, because you could tell the talk show host had an agenda or the interviewer had an agenda.
Like, gotcha.
Yeah, it was definitely that. And they were trying to and it was not just a gotcha. It was like, so many people hate you. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna put you in your place. And it was like, I don't know. It just, you watch those interviews and they're just awkward. Mm-hmm. And you feel for him as a gay person because he's being out and he's denied it till he died that he was. But it's just, but everyone, it wouldn't come up that often. I don't think if people knew it, and he would deny it, but you could, now I was telling Spence when I was talking about this, I was like, if I'm feeling a little bit not like Nancy Grace when I say this, but like you could see in his eyes and how he was looking away, how he responded, like it was an awkward question for him to have. And I mean, we talk about the kids, being outed and in school and being comfortable, he went all his life, he was trying to fit in and again to just be outed all the time, and because the interviewers across were like, I'm gonna get you, like you're on this is good ratings because no one likes you. Mm-hmm. And now I get to call you out for being a homosexual, which no one likes. It was that kind of, it wasn't just like And I'm sure off screen, these hosts were like fans of, not fans.
Talk with him, take a picture with him, yeah. Well, whatever.
It's that, and they had plenty of gay friends. But the way they make it seem like, you know, they're calling him out to be gay because you know that's a gross thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know at you're the time, gay. Like, yeah. And so it's just that sort of thing that, again, I don't really have sympathy for him, but it was just like,
No, I don't want to say I don't, lives, have, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't want to say I don't have sympathy for him. He's, well, because I'm like, he's a human being, like, so there's that sense of humanity, but it just, it was that. Not
of that for me.
It just felt awkward. I mean, he was interviewed on 60 Minutes with Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace asked, do you have AIDS? A lot of people believe you're homosexual, and Roy Cohn said, it's a lie. I can tell you categorically, I do not have AIDS. But just to kind of be presented like that in the 80s when it was so, like, you were a leper, and just be like, ha. Like, and the way Mike Wallace wasn't like, oh, do you have AIDS? Like, let's talk about this.
Do you have
AIDS? Like, do you have AIDS? Like, it was again, a gotcha.
Yeah, it was an thing. Attack, yeah.
But he acknowledged, he's like, I know why people say I might be a homosexual because I'm unmarried and middle-aged. And
had sex with men. That's so crazy of me.
He harkened it back. He's like, people have been saying this since when I was, you know, linked with McCarthy and David Shine, he's like, that's what, you know, why people, we were all unmarried, we were all single, and we were targeting gays. He's like, that's why people say that about me. But again, it came up in multiple interviews, like, oh, we'll talk about the unspoken, like, they danced around it in a way, like, they knew it was not good to talk about, but they were like, we're gonna talk about it, we're gonna call
bring
you
up
out.
To get you
like I said, often brought up in interviews, always denied it. He died, according to the National Institute of Health, the NIH, he died of complications related to AIDS. I say that because I guess they don't still do this, but at the time in the 80s, like, if you were diagnosed with HIV AIDS, they would record it in their database, right?
Yeah.
And so, he went, before he died, he went, he went to the hospital, and I guess that's when they found out he had AIDS. Maybe he knew it before. He claimed he had liver cancer. He's like, oh, no, I had liver cancer. So when that 60 Minutes interview with George Wallace, he was like, no, I was in the hospital because, one, I had something removed from my ear, and then when I was there, they uncovered that I had liver cancer. I'm in remission now, so I'm okay. But it's like, well, no, we found that it was in the NIH database. But you think about that, again, kind of the darkness of the gotcha-ism.
That they could, like, go searching through the NIH database or have someone on the inside to find out who had HIV and
fucked up. I mean, regardless of he's scum of the earth, there's still kind of that aspect
privacy
of it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if you found something out about Donald Trump that was that salacious, would you do? I mean, it's an ethical thing, right? I mean,
well, it is, because it means, like, what level are you willing to stoop to?
Yeah.
Like, to stoop to the level that you're against to bring them down further? Like,
and we say that in the context of it being 2022, but would you be saying something different in 2018 or 2019 when Donald Trump was still president? You're like, get him, got him. Like,
yeah. Take him down.
So, I don't know. Like you said, I'm not like, oh, Roy Cohn, what a nice, like, we should, but it is, like, the way I'm coming at it from a place of humanity as someone who's been, you know, in the closet and who's, like, having to, like, face the concert, like, you're gay, you like boys, like, what, and it's just like, I know I didn't like that, like, and then to be put that, like, every interview, someone's like, and we know you're gay, but we're gonna ask you,
or we know that you were just diagnosed with HIV or AIDS,
which, again, in the 80s, like, that's a very personal thing, like, we talk about this all the time, of all the empathy we feel for all those people that were lost because of this virus, right? But we suddenly are okay with it because it's Roy Cohn. I mean, I'm not saying I am, but I'm saying at the time, like, that was pretty evident that we were okay to, like, lynch him, you know, put him hang him in the town square, because we didn't like him. So I don't know. Not great. Destroyed. I mean, why? People didn't like him. People would spit in his food. I mean, he'd hang out in Provincetown. People like waiters would spit in his food. I mean, he destroyed hundreds of lives, thousands of lives. He was always in the public eye. He was known. He was never convicted, but accused of fraud, blackmail, and perjury. He apparently had $7 million in back taxes that he owed. And he says himself, you know, he's like, the thing that's going to be on my tombstone, that I was, you know, McCarthy's chief aide. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't look at him favorably, but I look at the way they were treating gay people in the closet at that time as something that, I guess maybe that's the way to say it. Like, the way the media felt compelled, just because they didn't like him. And I, like, I'm well, sure they, like Mike Wallace said, had friends who were gay, and he was, but this one person, we're like, we're going to call you out. Like, we know you're, this is your weak link, and we're going to call you out on
they
it.
They used so it as a cheap dig, because, I mean, at the time, AIDS people were, gay people, shoot, sorry. Gay people were allowed to be the punching bag, the, you know, that political joke, the ones that everyone wanted to talk about and, like, make fun of, essentially, and going even so far to talk about anyone with HIV or AIDS as well, was just that second, like, ringer, you know, hitting them and saying, just punching them, stab and twisting it, you know, twisting the knife. So I think that was kind of the take there. That was, it was a cheap, dirty, low blow, that it was like, you know what, this is good journalism. Good gotcha, not good journalism. Good gotcha moments. To try and
get almost you. Like a taste of your own medicine. Like you expose. Oh, taste of your own medicine for sure. You know, expose or
attack.
Expose, attack. Yeah. Put these people, and now it's gonna come back
and bite you. Yeah. Yeah.
It felt homophobic, like watching these interviews, and that's definitely where I kind of like. And he had to sit there and take it, and he did take it.
You know what I'm saying?
But
I don't know. Like I said, I don't necessarily.
It's like too wrong. It's like
I'm too far removed from it to be like, oh, poor guy. Like, you know, I think some lenses would be like, oh, we should feel differently about him. I mean, the fact he did ruin thousands of lives, and he mentored the last president of the United States,
Donald Trump.
I got nothing good to say about that. Because again, going back to the conversation we were having earlier about the Florida cases, like, this would be a different scenario. This would be amped up. Right now it's kind of below the radar, but it would be amped up. I mean, you could argue the president, Joe Biden, like, by expressing support, but it was, even that, like, did you guys know the president, like, tweeted, like, support for the no. But if it were Donald Trump saying, oh yeah, I totally agree with this, we would all know.
Yeah, and he'd be, because he wouldn't just have tweeted something, he'd be out there being like, yeah, Florida governor, you know, pass this bill right now, get this, and if, you know, get challenged, we'll bring it right up to the Supreme Court that I stacked, and blah blah blah, like,
yeah, and you know, Texas, you should do it too, and West Virginia, you should do it too, and if you don't, then, you know, shame on you for not doing
then
it,
you're all queers too.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, and you know what, I demand, you know, Nancy Pelosi puts a bill on my desk for something at the federal level. That would be the tweet.
Yeah, that would be. He'd be going off.
But you know what? Y'all want to vote for him? Not. Go ahead.
No.
Just more people vote against him.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
Yeah. On a bright note, I got nothing.
I got nothing. We just ended this in such a great headspace here.
Okay, well, we talked about this last time, and I said I was going to do this at the beginning of the podcast this time, but I didn't. But it is Black History Month, right? We're wrapping up Black History Month. And, yeah, we have a number of iconic LGBTQ black siblings that we've talked about on our podcast. And, again, they're not just black or LGBTQ. They're Americans or people. Mm-hmm. They're part of the citizens history, of the world that have made a significant impact in history. So Hattie McDaniel is one example, an entertainer in the heyday of Hollywood and like blues and all that sort of stuff. Like, she doing the thing. Barbara Jordan, a politician. Speaking of crooked politicians, she took Richard Nixon to the ringer when he was being his impeachment hearings were started. Willie Ninja, one of the first drag queens that were out there. Marsha P, obviously we know Marsha P, Mother Marsha P, of the Stonewall. William Dorsey Swan, again, talk about iconic drag queens. Back in the 1800s, was doing the drag thing. Ma Rainey, Jason Collins, of sports fame. Bayard Rustin, talked about him. Lorraine Hansberry, Broadway playwright, Audre Lorde, RuPaul, Lil Nas X, like all these folks are part of his, not just, again, LGBTQ history, this but they've is, made yeah, a mark in
big things outside of their bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like that have impacted our society.
Right? And who we are as gay people. Or
straight people.
Or Americans. People. Or, yeah, or you're right. People absolutely. Of the world, right? Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like the impact isn't just, I mean, we've talked about people like these are folks that are significant in our community, but these folks are have made an impact in
on the world.
And it's not just on the world in a sense like, oh, they put gay people in the world. Like they have had an impact
just done
on
something.
How, yeah. That is significant. So
something significant.
And a lot you want to hear about more of these. We also did interviewed Zaylor Stout, who wrote Our Gay History in 50 States. That's episode 88. And it kind of gets a rundown of, like, again, how the cross section of LGBTQ history, Black history, American history, all kind of come together. So I encourage you to listen to those episodes on our podcast.
On our podcast.
With that, girls, I got nothing left. Y'all got anything else in the tank? What you got?
Shout out to our spoopy podcast.
Okay, mama.
If you want to hear my voice as well as Spencer's on the... what?
It's a good one.
It is a good one. Yeah,
the podcast, not your voice.
Okay. Oh. If you want to hear some sass and a whole lot of
crass.
That's a good one. Sass and crass. And just a lot of silliness. Hey,
marketing mama. Mm-hmm. Call me mama marketer.
Sass and crass. You can listen to our spoopy podcast.
It's like
you
two just, people.
Sass yeah, and sass crass. And crass. That's our spoopy podcast.
Wait, who's sass and who's crass?
Well, I'm Chris, and crass, you'd say, crass.
Put your gay voice on.
I'm crass.
Are you crass?
I'm crass.
Crass.
My name is crass. Hi.
Oh, my crass.
Well, you know, that's, I just thought it was perfect.
I like it.
But that's rspoopypodcast.com, rspoopypodcast on Instagram, rspoopy on Twitter, and rspoop on Facebook. If you want to send us an email, that's rspoopypodcast@gmail.com.
Well, that's it. We did the thing. Dusty, where can we find you?
I'm on Instagram.
Moving to a new place.
I'm next Saturday. Moving 1 week from tomorrow.
Pull up to the bumper.
Tell all the listeners where you're moving to. What's your address?
Yeah, let us know.
41. It does start at 41.
Oh.
90 1 2 1 800.
No, I'm very excited.
You know you're a 1-900 slut.
You can find me at 1-800 mattress.
1-900 lay me.
No.
Or 1-900 slay me.
Slay me, work a bitch, yas, God, hunty.
Stop.
Whatever, just playing along.
Y'all better go to bed. That's it. We're here.
We're queer.
Get used to it.